Hiya, Bobby.
Hi, Cam.
You want to go for a ride?
Sure, Ken.
Jump in.
I'm a Bobby girl in the Bobby world. Life in plastic, it's fantastic. You can brush my hair, undress me everywhere. Imagination, life is your creation.
Come on, Barbie, let's go party.
I'm a Bobby.
I know what you're thinking. The same thing that I'm thinking. What in H-E double hockey sticks is Farwell starting the show with today? Something that for some reason I think our regular listener Kyle would be a fan of. I don't know why Kyle's name jumps out at me. Probably the techno aspect of that song. But there's just no accounting for taste back in 1997. And a hit is a hit, and that right there, 27 years ago, was a hit for Aqua, the Scandinavian dance pop act, which began a four-week run at number one on the singles chart with Barbie Girl. It was a massive worldwide hit. The single sold more than 8 million copies, and you get to hear a little bit of it to start our show on this Friday morning. We have turned the calendar to November. Welcome to a new month. It is the 1st of November. It's also, because it's Friday, an all-request Friday here on the show. So if you want to hear something like Aqua or anything else, maybe something you actually like. See, I don't just play my favorite songs. I find something on this day in music history that I think might perk up your ears to start the day. Today it just happened to be Barbie Girl. But if you want to make a request and hear a little bit of your favorite song during the show today, you can let Devin Robertson, our guy on the other side of the glass, know when you call in about an issue you want to talk about, or just give him a call and say, hey, can you play this song for me? Or send me an email anytime, mike@570news.com. Did you see any Barbies? I mean, I think the movie was the bigger hit a year ago, but were there any Barbies out trick-or-treating at your door last night? I wouldn't know. And here's the thing. I say I wouldn't know because I'll get to the number of trick-or-treaters we saw last night in just a moment. But I feel like, you know, when you're a kid, it's the competition to see who can collect the most candy, right? We had this discussion last night in between knocks on the door, and we had lots of time in between those knocks on the door. But I was always jealous as a kid of those kids who had pillowcases that they took out, because that's a big sack to collect candy in, right? We were never allowed to take something so big, right? That would be a little bit greedy on the part of us youngsters. So we had to take a bag or one of those plastic pumpkins, and sometimes if we could get back home and empty it and go back out again, we could, but never got to take the pillowcase with us. But that was the thing when you're a kid, right? It's who can collect the most candy. That was essentially the competition. I feel now, as an adult, it's all about who gets to give out the most candy, right? Everybody's posting about the cute trick-or-treaters that came to the door and how many were there. And then there's us. And I've decided that I'm the Charlie Brown of giving out candy at Halloween. You remember Charlie Brown, right?
I got 5 pieces of candy. I got a chocolate bar.
I got a quarter. I got a rock.
Yeah, poor Charlie Brown. Always got a rock in his Halloween treat bag. I'm not giving out rocks. We give out good candy at the Farwell household. But for whatever reason, we don't get kids. We had 15 kids come to the door last night. 15! 7 knocks, totaling 15 kids. Meantime, my buddy, who lives like 2 blocks away, gave out 3 kilograms worth of candy, he told me. Another friend who lives over in Chicopee Hills, more than 600 chocolate bars, more than 100 packs of Pokemon cards, and then she was raiding her own pantry for granola bars and anything else she might be able to give away to all of the kids that came through her neighborhood. We got 15 kids and 7 knocks on the door. Oh, well.
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever
do. Well, it's not just the lonely Farwell front porch last night. It's your Farwell Show 5 on this Friday morning. Number one, while you were trick-or-treating or handing out those treats last night, the Leafs were playing and winning, and Austin Matthews, initials AM, was scoring. So here's a little AM on AM radio in the AM.
Stolen by the Leafs. Matthews doesn't shoot it at the empty net. Now tries to bank it and scores! Don't play billiards with that guy. That was a great bank shot and in.
It really was. I mean, as far as empty net goals go, come on with your coming on. It was a beauty. And the Leafs win. The Leafs beat Seattle last night. Number two on your Farwell Show 5 this morning, the Toasty Toes campaign is back for another year. Started in 2013, the campaign has raised more than $227,000 for agencies that support the most vulnerable in our community. Donations are eligible for a tax receipt and can be made at wrcf.ca/Toasty Toes. Number three, local Liberal MPs have written a letter to Canada's Minister of Heritage asking that the federal government support the KW Symphony, quote, for the betterment of our region and beyond. The symphony announced on Wednesday that it was emerging from bankruptcy, is debt-free, and is planning its future for performances in our community. Number four, a lockdown at the federal prison for women in Kitchener has ended. Staff at the Grand Valley Institute for Women say the lockdown was implemented on October 19th to deal with a security-related and health safety issue, which has now been resolved. And number five on your Farwell Show 5 this morning. This is the weekend. We fall back as daylight saving time comes to an end and we return to standard time. Don't forget to turn your clocks back 1 hour before bed on Saturday. Another way to look at it is this is a long weekend, longer by 1 hour. And that is your Farwell Show 5 for this Friday morning. We'll take a break. When we come back, earlier this week, Doug Ford making an announcement, all of the attention when he was questioned during that announcement was about the upcoming $200 rebate checks. But there was another piece of audio that I thought was compelling, interesting. I shared it with you, and it sounds like mayors across Ontario, including the mayor of Cambridge, have responded. They've taken up the premier's challenge. I'll tell you what it's all about coming up on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio.
Dusty old farmer out working your field, hanging down over your tractor wheel. The sun beating down turned the red paint to orange, and rusty old patches of steel.
That one goes out to our farming friends in Wilmot from Paul on this All Request Friday here on the program. Murray McLaughlin and the Farmer's Song, part of your All Request Friday on the Mike Farwell Show. Earlier this week, Ontario Premier Doug Ford was at an announcement, as a provincial leader is wont to do. And then, of course, following the announcement, there are all kinds of questions asked, leading to different media stories to come from it. The overwhelming narrative following that announcement earlier this week was around the $200 rebate checks that we're all going to be getting. This was prior to the fall economic update this week. However, there was another piece of audio from that question and answer with reporters that struck me as interesting. And in case you missed it earlier this week, here's what the premier had to say about homelessness.
Well, I talked to many of the big city mayors. You know, first of all, there was a ruling in Waterloo from the court saying you have to put someone into a shelter. That's fine. And they get a choice. So they go into a shelter, they look around, I don't like it. Well, that's a problem. If there's a roof over their heads, you know, they have to do it. But I have an idea. Why don't the big city mayors actually put in writing that they want the province to change the homeless program, make sure that we move the homeless along, and why don't they put in use the notwithstanding clause or something like that? That's what they should be doing, rather than just kind of going up to the edge. Let's see if they have the backbone to do it. If they really want the homeless situation to improve? Because I'll tell you, I get endless calls about people camping out in the parks, needles being all over the park. They're scared to put their kids out in the park by themselves, no matter what age it is. And we have to make a move. Big city mayors, you want to get it done? I need that letter.
Well, let me say to you, Mr. Ford, challenge accepted by a dozen mayors in Ontario who have sent the following to the office of the premier. We request that your government consider the following measures and, where necessary, use the notwithstanding clause to ensure these measures are implemented in a timely and effective way. The provincial government is requested to become an intervener on any court case that restricts the ability of municipalities to regulate and prohibit encampments. The provincial government requested to strengthen the existing system of mandatory community-based and residential mental health care. The provincial government is requested to implement a drug and diversion court system. The provincial government is requested to amend the Trespass to Property Act. And the provincial government is requested to enact legislation providing clear guidance regarding the open and public use of drugs. This letter, signed by mayors of a dozen communities, the Big City Mayors Caucus, where this was talked about a couple of weeks ago, that led to the premier's comments earlier this week. There are 29 mayors who are members of that Big City Mayors Caucus, 29 mayors of municipalities greater than 100,000. Roughly half, 12 of those 29, have signed on to this letter, including the mayors of Windsor, Sudbury, St. Catharines, Pickering, Oshawa, Oakville, Clarington, Chatham-Kent, Brantford, Brampton, Barrie, and yes, Cambridge Mayor Jan Liggett. And this takes me to something I was watching on the news last evening, where in Guelph, a new public space use bylaw has been implemented, and bylaw officers this week in Guelph went to St. George's Square, high-profile public square in the downtown of Guelph, and those bylaw officers began posting eviction notices on those tents because people living in those tents are in contravention of the new bylaw in Guelph. And Mayor Cam Guthrie was very matter-of-fact about it. And I can't say, I think he's got some courage to speak in the way that he did, just like these mayors have some courage to sign on to a letter like this. But the issue is not that we don't care about these people. The issue is, and you heard the premier allude to it in the audio I just played for you, while there may not be enough shelter spaces to go around, there are shelter spaces, I promise you there are, shelter spaces that go unused in our communities today because they're not deemed suitable enough to the person who is being offered them. Maybe they can't take a pet to that shelter. Maybe they can't have their intimate partner with them in that shelter. Maybe they're not allowed to use the drugs to which they are addicted in that shelter. And these are the real challenges. But some spaces do exist, and those spaces go unused. So what are we as cities to do? We do need to create more spaces, both in terms of shelter and in treatment for mental health and addiction. We absolutely do. But we have found ourselves in a position of late whereby we have essentially surrendered to encampments as being part of our municipal landscape. And at minimum, these 12 mayors, and I'm really surprised Mayor Guthrie's name isn't on there, but are saying, hang on a second here. Like, we have to find a way to better manage and or control these encampments. I can't say as I blame them. I really can't. We are at a really difficult spot. I'll just say again, I can't imagine why, of all the things we talk about expropriating, why we're not expropriating motels. I'll take you right down Victoria Street in Kitchener and find you several. And there you go. You've got some ready-made, already built shelter. Could we start there? Is it even a possibility? This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio.
A
A dozen mayors of large cities across Ontario have sent a letter to the premier, basically calling the premier's bluff, I suppose, asking that the notwithstanding clause be invoked so that municipalities can better deal with encampments, addiction on their streets. Rob Deutschman is a regional councillor representing Kitchener. He's on the phone with us this morning. Morning, Rob.
Morning, Mike. Just calling in with a comment. If you want to have a question-answer session, set up a time, I'll be happy to come in and deal with any questions you have on this matter. But I just wanted to say that the Premier of Ontario has just initiated the most offensive comments that one could make with respect to this issue. Basically, what he is saying is that if you live in a tent, if you are homeless living in a tent, you should be not denied the basic fundamental rights that are accorded to every other citizen of Canada. Basically, the right to life, liberty, and the security of person. And so what this premier is saying is because you're in a tent, you are a lesser individual, you're a lesser citizen, you're a lesser human being than all the rest of us, and should be denied fundamental rights that are protected under the Charter. It's offensive, and it's a sad day when the Premier of Ontario is speaking in that sort of language. Thanks, Mike, for the opportunity.
Thanks, Rob, for making the call. And again, I truly understand that point of view, and that's why we are where we are. Right? Because simply because somebody is in a tent does not make them a lesser human by any stretch of the imagination. I think where we end up struggling and we come in and butt heads on this, and you know what? We will get Rob back for a longer conversation on the show. I think that'd be a great idea because here is where we're at. But where do, it's the old, the age old saying of, the right for you to throw a punch ends with your fist at the tip of my nose, right? Or something along those lines. So at what point do the rights of those people choosing tents infringe upon the rights of people who want to enjoy their open public spaces a la Guelph? And that's essentially what the mayor of Guelph said yesterday in the evening news report I saw on CTV News, right? People are staying away from their public space, their downtown businesses are saying this is having an impact. Well, they've got a right to earn a living at their business. People have a right to enjoy that open public downtown space, but they don't feel like they feel like that right's being infringed upon. So how do we strike a balance? How do we strike a balance in all of this? And at least in the case of these dozen mayors and what the premier has said, the notwithstanding clause may be the next step. I don't know that we'll get there, but this is where we're at. This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News. We had dramatically different closing arguments in the U.S. presidential race this week. One for Donald Trump at Madison Square Garden in New York was filled with all manner of commentary that continued to and probably still likely does swirl around the news cycle and various sites online. You know, quote unquote jokes from a stand-up comedian who was part of it talking about a large pile of garbage in the middle of the ocean. I think that's called Puerto Rico. Something along those lines, I'm paraphrasing. Meantime, Kamala Harris stood near the Capitol building in Washington and said that she would be a president for everyone, even those who do not vote for her. The big vote comes up on Tuesday in the United States, and Don Abelson is the academic director at Wilson College of Leadership and Civic Engagement, as well as a professor of political science at McMaster University, joins us to talk about it. Don, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
What are your takeaways from the final remarks we heard as these campaigns come to a close this week?
Well, I think it just, you know, puts a bow on the package that we've seen unveiled over the last several weeks and months. You know, Trump's campaign, once again, is all about fear. It's about, you know, trying to stir up more anxiety and disillusionment and anger among his and some undecided voters. And Harris's focus is more on hope, bringing the country together, getting through these decades-long periods of political toxicity and partisanship, polarization, So it's really not about issues. I mean, most Americans can agree that immigration is a problem. Most agree that, you know, healthcare should be a priority, and government needs to figure out how to deal with the housing crisis and their foreign policy commitments. It's more about the messaging. It's the narrative that has been constructed around all these issues. Trump's being very negative, and Harris is being hopeful and more positive.
It's really interesting, as I reflect on that, Don, the idea that this is perhaps less about policy and more about how to either further polarize or reduce that polarization that we've seen plaguing, quite frankly, U.S. politics. But I guess that's kind of where we're at today, isn't it?
We are. And, you know, I use the analogy of two massive tectonic plates, you know, one representing the Republicans, the other the Democrats, and they're moving closer and closer to colliding. And we know what happens. We know what happens in history when that occurs, and all that energy is going to be released. So the question is, you know, what is going to prevent, you know, 75 to 80 million people who might end up voting for Donald Trump, convince them that there's another path forward? And the other thing, you know, we need to think about, and I know you and I have talked about this, even back in 2020 when Trump reluctantly left the Oval Office, that, you know, he might disappear, which he actually didn't, but Trumpism will remain a political phenomenon. So regardless of the outcome next week, assuming we know what the outcome is next week, you're still going to have these two competing blocks divide the country, and it's going to take a whole lot more than a single election in order to restore some sanity and vision to the United States.
Are you surprised at all at how close this race is based on the polling numbers we've been receiving?
I haven't been that surprised. No. You know, would we again go back to 2020 and we see, you know, how relatively close that was. You know, I believe the party strategists, I believe the pollsters. I think there are going to be razor-thin margins, and of course it'll, you know, down to the seven battleground states. It's all going to boil down to voter turnout. And if, you know, Harris has done enough over the last few months, along with her surrogates and party loyalists, to try and get out the vote. Democrats tend to do well when you have massive voter turnout. They don't when people decide to stay home on their couch. But what it really makes me think about is, you know, there's several European countries and Asian countries around the globe where voting is mandatory. It's not elective. It's mandatory. And, I think we're almost at the point now, you know, thinking about is there a different strategy that ought to be pursued? Because there's absolutely no excuse, given how polarized the country is, for people not to express their values and preferences. So, you know, it still surprises me that they're undecided voters. It still surprises me that there's some people who will not vote, given the struggles that many people have endured in order to secure the right to vote. But the thin margins, no, that does not surprise me.
You mentioned those seven battleground states, Don. I know one of them, of course, is Pennsylvania. I just happened to be there last week. Now, work didn't allow me to wander too far from where work was taking me, so yeah. I wouldn't by any stretch describe my time in Pennsylvania as fact-finding in any way. But I did see one Trump sign on my tours around, one sign supporting Donald Trump out front a house. But where will this election be decided?
You know, it could be decided in Pennsylvania or Michigan. You know, those are the two states that I'll be paying very, very close attention to. And, of course, Wisconsin. I mean, there are two different strategies in play. For the Democrats, it's about holding on, you know, to those three, you know, traditionally blue states. And, of course, they have flipped periodically. But, you know, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Harris has to sweep. If she doesn't sweep, then she's going to have to flip some of the red states like Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, which, you know, will be more difficult. So her strategy, and the reason why she and her campaign have spent so much time you know, in the Keystone State and Wisconsin, is to make sure the voters are there for her on Election Day and that she's able to secure, you know, the 19 electoral votes from Pennsylvania and all the other electoral votes attached to traditional blue states.
Very interesting time indeed, and the next few days will be very intriguing. Looking forward to talking to you again on Tuesday, Don. Thanks for being here this morning.
My pleasure. I look forward to speaking to you as well.
Enjoy your day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
Don Abelson is the academic director at the Wilson College of Leadership and Civic Engagement in Hamilton. He's also a professor of political science at McMaster University. He is Washington bound. We will talk to Don again on Tuesday, voting day in America, and get the sense of what things are like in the U.S. Capitol. As of today, we know what the landscape looks like. It's been the same kind of campaign, I would argue, that we have seen the last three, including this one now, the last three cycles in the U.S. We are a little bit less about policy, aren't we? And we are learning just how deeply polarized we are. I, for one, am astounded that the race can be at least predicted by polls as close as it is. Even if I were a dyed-in-the-wool Republican, I could not vote for someone of Donald Trump's character. I might, even if I were a dyed-in-the-wool Republican, turn in my Republican card because they allowed this person to become their nominee. And yes, I'm taking a moral high ground here, and oftentimes that's a shaky ground to be on. But that's what, for me, it's not even a consideration, just because of the character of the person who would be given the reins of power again in the United States. But that's me. If you had the choice, if you were able to cast a ballot, and we had some polling not too long ago that suggested most Canadians would vote for Kamala Harris, how would you vote? If you got to cast a ballot in the U.S. presidential election, would you cast it for Kamala Harris? Would you cast it for Donald Trump? Let me know. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio.
Trumpism will remain a political phenomenon. So regardless of the outcome next week, assuming we know what the outcome is next week, you're still going to have these two competing blocs divide the country. And it's going to take a whole lot more than a single election in order to restore some sanity and vision to the United States.
Don Abelson is the academic director at the Wilson College of Leadership and Civic Engagement, as well as a professor of political science at McMaster University in Hamilton, joins us this morning to talk about the final week of the U.S. presidential campaign. Don will be with us again next Tuesday morning. That's a big day. That is voting day in the U.S. And Don will be in Washington. As we head into the final weekend before that big vote, though, in the U.S., we wonder, based on what you have heard and seen through this election campaign stateside, if given a ballot, who would you cast it in favor of, Kamala Harris or Donald Trump? Let's go to the phones, hear from you. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. Love the show. However, I'm going to move on. You were talking about I would vote for Trump, 100%. Would like him in 2016. However, you're saying that you wouldn't vote for him because of your morals and stuff like that. I find that a lot of the stuff, the rhetoric that's said about Trump is unfair, untrue, and if it's morals that we're talking about, let's look at the nomination process for the Democrats. Was that really a fair nomination process for Kamala Harris? And if you're looking at policy on either side, Trump is MAGA, Make America Great Again. I don't understand what's so bad about that.
Just to be clear, Steve, I'm not getting into Make America Great Again versus whatever vision Kamala Harris is putting forward. I'm basing mine again on moral grounds here, and Donald Trump is a reprehensible human being, in my opinion, the way he has treated women, particularly the convictions against him in courts of law. Like, it just, the man's morally bankrupt, in my opinion.
Accurate, because there's been a lot of lies told about Trump.
He didn't say you can just grab women by the blank? He didn't say that? Like, who says something like that and thinks they're fit to run a country?
But how long ago was that? They tried.
What difference does it make?
2016. They tried that. And you know how many women has he promoted and advanced in his career? He's also promoted women, even on the show Apprentice. Not saying that it's a promotion for somebody. That's actually gear. But the thing is, in his career,
okay. Well, which women has he promoted? I'd love to know. Like, tell me the woman that he has built up and.
Well, first of all, let's talk about the Lawfare. His attorney is a woman. The counsel for all of this, in my opinion, Lawfare against them, which is another thing that I would argue that the Democrats are very corrupt on, trying to take out a former president or a nominee by using Lawfare or their justice system to take him out, which literally, in some of the cases that I followed, is kind of very unmoral in itself. But the thing is, yes, maybe Trump did say that. We're not all perfect. But the thing is, I've never seen that or anything. I think it's a lot of rhetoric, a lot of political bantering. That's my opinion. I don't believe. In fact, I'm at the point now where I really don't believe any of the rhetoric the Democrats or media or anybody puts out there about them, especially with the Russia collusion cases and the other thing about the Hunter Biden laptop and all that other stuff, the things that were used against them.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. I do. But just to be clear, like, Donald Trump literally did speak those words. It was his voice on the audio recording. And that's just one small part of it, right? He also kind of, I mean, and you can choose your partners however you want, but had intimate relations with Stormy Daniels and then paid some hush money in that particular instance. Anyway, If extramarital affairs and grabbing women by the blank are okay, that and I understand why you want to look past that, and I certainly understand the whataboutism that happens here. Yeah, but the Democrats aren't squeaky clean, and the media is not helping. Our culture of mistrust, I think, is understandable. I'll just put it that way. Jersey Bill, good morning.
Yes, and I have voted by email for Kamala Harris. But the thing is that, I'm trying to keep a very even keel about this. I haven't gotten as involved in the campaign as I might have liked. I don't know exactly why, but, as I said before, if Trump wins, I just hope that he would calm his side and he would do things a little differently, but I don't have very much faith in that. That's what really bothers me. You know, there are other people who were caught in doing things against women and all that, and they've been more contrite than he's been. That's the real problem. He's always has to be not only the center of attention, but he's never wrong. And that's what we can't afford. Recently, the best thing she said recently, Kamala Harris, I make mistakes. Trump never admits that. And when you're president, if you don't understand that you will occasionally make a mistake and you need some good advice from your advisors and you're not the smartest brain in the world, then, boy, that's what's really going to get us in trouble if Trump gets elected.
It's an interesting point, Billy. I would use that as a note for leaders in general, right? Their word is not the only word, and yes, they can make mistakes. And that's across the board when it comes to leadership. One of my favorite quotes, I don't know where it came from, but it's something along the lines of leadership is not from a top down. It starts at the center of a circle. I think that's a fantastic way to look at it. This is the Mike Farwell Show. We'll take more calls after this. 570 News Radio. Just ahead of our update from the City News Center at 10. Let's get back to the phones, hear from you on who you'd vote for if you could. Harris, Trump, Walter, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I think this whole thing with Trump and Harris, I mean, I thought Trump was pretty bad the last two elections with his rhetoric and whatnot. But this time he's really, going overboard, because I think that if he loses this election, which he is going to try everything not to do, he's going to jail. At some point, he'll be going to jail if he does not win, and he does not want to lose because of that.
So you're voting Harris by the sounds of things, if you could.
Yes. I mean, his attitude, even on the world stage, in the past. I don't know if you recall this. There was a meeting somewhere, and he was walking through all the other leaders, and he was shoving them out of the way so he could get up to the front, and just look so unprofessional at a job that needs, you know, like to be a professional. And I understand that he's not a politician, a normal, you know, so-called politician, but his ass is grass, man.
Okay. I think that his very obvious imperfections and fallibilities make him more relatable or real to some as well. Sorry, I got to cut you there, Walter, because we got to get to the update in the 570 News Center. And then council chambers every Friday morning. We'll talk to regional councillor Doug Craig in our next segment on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio. Friday mornings, 10 a.m., we do a weekly segment we call Council Chambers. It's an opportunity for us to do a deeper dive into one of the areas of our region. It was something that you asked for, wanted to hear more of, and we are more than happy to deliver on Friday mornings at 10. Today, Council Chambers, the segment takes us to Regional Council, and a member from there representing Cambridge, Doug Craig, joins us on the show. Doug, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Mike.
The regional budget deliberations are well underway. It has been asked that the budget get down to an increased number of 8%. Do you feel as though that's attainable, considering you were starting at greater than 12?
Well, we were starting at 12, as you say. We set up a subcommittee to work through the summer to see how we could reduce it. Can we obtain 8%? Yes, we can. I believe we can do that. But I think to all your listeners this morning, they're not going to be happy with that, and either is regional council, because to get below 8% is going to be very costly in terms of reduction in programs, and that's an aspect now that we have to start looking at if we want to go lower.
What kinds of programs may we be without if we have to get down that low?
Well, we're looking at expansions. I mean, the region of Waterloo is one of the fastest growing metropolitan areas in Canada, and we've experienced a great influx of new residents. To get lower, you have to look at programs that need to perhaps be expanded, like more paramedics, as an example. You might have to look at cutting back on childcare, things like that. And these are programs that are going to really hurt people out there that depend on the region and depend on things like transit and getting around, to cut back on those services. So these are the difficult decisions that we're faced with.
You've been around municipal politics for a long time, Doug. Could you ever have imagined a situation like this where you're talking about 8% tax increases being something that you're working towards? I mean, that would have been a very high ceiling decades ago.
Yeah, my early years, 2 and 3% was considered high. But what's happening is that municipalities are being downloaded on more and more by the provincial government. We're picking up programs up to the tune of $200 million that in other provinces, the local municipal taxpayers don't have to pay for. We're paying for that, and we're in such a vice in terms of the amount of monies we have to do what people want us to do in terms of the kind of community they want to live in.
You mentioned when it comes to programs and services that may not be able to be expanded as we try to work down to an 8% tax increase, paramedic services as an example, and that makes me think of other emergency responders, including, of course, police, and the police budget is always a contentious part of the regional budget overall. It's the largest line item within that regional budget. I know there were some community consultations, the chance for the public to weigh in earlier this week. What have you been hearing, Doug, as far as the police budget goes from both the community and your fellow councillors?
Well, I think we have to be careful here, because what I hear in the community, and this is on a weekly basis from constituents, they want more police. They want better responses. And we can't provide that because we're having a terrible time, bringing police into the regional community with regards to hiring. So that's been very difficult. What I'm finding is that the police budget always becomes kind of the scapegoat for complaints about budgets being too high. And I don't agree with that at all. We have to properly provide for our police, much like we do for the fire department. And these emergency responders need our support.
So when you say we have to be careful here, and what you're hearing in the community, is that different than what you hear from people who show up to present at regional council?
Well, you're correct about that, but you're also, we have elected officials throughout the region that aren't 100% supportive of police. And we've had movements to reduce the budget, and that's caused a lot of concern within the policing community.
Something else that has caused some concern within the community generally is photo radar. I know the region has a pretty aggressive ASE, automated speed enforcement program, plans to get up to 175 cameras in the region by 2028. But the city of Kitchener this week said, we want to do what we want on our streets that are under the municipal jurisdiction. Are we seeing some breaks here in the dam of photo radar in the region?
No, well, I think what we're seeing is different opinions on how to deal with speeding in the community and whether it's really warranted. Mayor Vrbanovic, who I've known well for years, has a very, and I respect him, he's a very comprehensive individual in how he looks at things. And they've determined at the city level that, no, they're not going to do this. But that's the choice that people have. The region is simply saying, we have choices here. If you want to put in speed cameras that we believe will have an effect in terms of reducing speeding in sensitive zones like schools, then we're giving you that option. And Kitchener has decided to go in a different direction.
Do you think the region is moving in the right direction with the rollout of speed cameras?
Well, I think across the region, we can all agree to one thing, and that is that people are speeding everywhere. And I think we can also agree, and I've seen this deterioration over the last number of years, about the hazard driving that you see from different individuals in the community. So we have an overall problem. It's just not speeding. I think we have to look at this. So what the region is trying to do, step by step, is improve the safety within the community.
Doug Craig is a regional councillor who represents the city of Cambridge on regional council. He joins us for our council chambers segment here this morning. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, the Herbs Road managed outdoor encampment gets funding extended until 2030. And what about that letter that big city mayors sent to the premier asking that the notwithstanding clause be invoked? Do we need to move in a direction towards mandatory treatment? We'll continue our conversation with Regional Councillor Doug Craig on the Mike Farwell Show this morning. This is 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Every Friday morning at 10 o'clock, we do a segment called Council Chambers, which allows us the opportunity to speak to one of our municipal politicians and do a deeper dive into their particular neighborhood. In this morning's case, we're speaking with Doug Craig, who is a regional councillor representing Cambridge. Doug, I know that the region just recently approved the extension of funding for the Herbs Road managed outdoor encampment until 2030. Right. Yeah. How, is that a prudent decision, do you believe?
Well, of course it is, because we have to get people into warm environments where they're safe and where they can access health issues. So I think it's a very prudent. We are doing the very best we can. And this relates back to the 8% budget. I mean, this is the kinds of monies that are going into helping people. And that's why our budget is so high in terms of all the different issues like homelessness and addiction, those kind of issues which are driving the budget.
It's been pointed out by one of your colleagues on regional council, Doug, that really we're reaching one in five people who go from the Herbs Road shelter into more stable housing. Could those millions not be better spent in other ways to help these folks?
Well, I think there is an argument in terms of people that are living on the streets going right into the supportive housing, but we don't have the supportive housing units to accommodate everybody. So this becomes a stepped process. In terms of mitigating the issues we're seeing in the community and helping people. And I think It is a it's been prudent, and I think it has been successful in a number of ways. But again, and I certainly support moving people as rapidly as possible into supportive housing and into better living conditions. The urban street is simply one of the initial steps. We have to look at it that way.
And when you talk about moving people into that more supportive housing, Doug, this goes back to something you said earlier, too, about provincial downloading. Here in Ontario, it is the municipality that is responsible for social housing, and Ontario is the only jurisdiction where that's the case.
That's correct. And I mean, I've been beating this drum for years. We need more help from the province and the feds to run our cities. And that's why we're in sort of this dire crisis of tax loading on to local citizens. Don't agree at all with what the province is doing or the support we're getting. We're not getting it.
You've been a big city mayor as the longtime mayor of Cambridge. You're now a member of our upper tier regional council here in the region of Waterloo. The province has suggested, or at least Premier Ford has, that it would be willing to help by using the notwithstanding clause to direct people out of encampments, to give municipalities power to clean those up, as well as involuntary treatment for mental health and addictions. Could the province help in that regard? Is that a good way to go?
Well, the province has got all the power, all the legislative power. The federal government has all the money. We have all the problems, and that is something we need to look at. I wouldn't suggest that politicians at the municipal level should be directing people off the streets into treatment. That would become a health jurisdiction. And it's the Ministry of Health that's got to come down here with new programs of how to treat people who are very difficult to deal with and need our immediate care, not the politicians at the local level.
You mentioned a moment ago, Doug, that you've been beating this drum for quite some time insofar as the problems that you see on the streets of the cities where you are elected. Are we making any progress? Are you confident that we can make progress in terms of changing the overall fiscal arrangement?
Well, it's interesting you would bring that up. I have a motion coming up next Wednesday at Regional Council asking that the region request our local MPPs to come up with a new fair deal for the region of Waterloo, much like the one that has been implemented in Toronto and in Ottawa, where they're literally getting Toronto billions of dollars, Ottawa over $600 million to help with their issues. We need that kind of help here.
You referenced earlier the $200 million plus that the region is required to spend on issues that would fall under a different government's jurisdiction. So is that something like a new deal might look like here for the region, $200 million?
Absolutely. And I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. When you look at what Toronto has been getting with regards to uploading the Don Valley Gardner Expressway, and I believe it's a $10 billion investment over the next 10 years directly into the coffers and into the capital projects in Toronto. There is no reason why the region of Waterloo cannot get the same kind of help on our level.
So considering we don't have a Don Valley Expressway, what might that help look like? LRT, well, housing?
It could look at that way, at a number of these issues. But I think, you see, these agreements didn't just happen. It's because MPPs from those various cities of Ottawa and Toronto work behind the scenes to get a new deal. I want our MPPs locally to do the same thing because we are struggling in terms of financial responsibilities to the programs we're having difficulty funding and to the unfortunate downloading of municipal taxes ever increasing on local citizens.
Doug, I wish you luck in that regard next week. I'll be watching with interest because, you know, we haven't always agreed on everything, but we agree on this for sure.
Yeah, anyways, I appreciate Mike having the opportunity to talk.
It's good to have you, Doug. Thanks, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Doug Craig is a regional councillor who represents Cambridge, joins us on the show this morning to talk more about those issues regionally through the lens of Cambridge. And interesting that we learn of the motion that will come before regional council next week. Listen, we have... let me think. Is it Kitchener Centre is not conservative? And Waterloo is so 3 of 5 local MPPs, the representative for Cambridge, Kitchener South, Hespler, and Kitchener Conestoga. 60% of our local members of provincial parliament are members of the sitting government at Queen's Park. Why couldn't they advocate for a better deal, a new deal here in the region of Waterloo? We are, I'll remind you, the 10th largest municipality in the country. And I do believe that the way things are going today, we are pricing people out of their opportunity to live here. The downloading has been incredible. I certainly agree with Councillor Craig on the motion that he'll bring forward. Will those three MPPs who represent the government of the day at Queen's Park listen? Will they advocate for a new fiscal deal for the region of Waterloo? I guess we'll see. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio, Rogers TV.
Market value on love. We're getting something for free. I don't know why, but when we're apart, something makes me want to start setting fires and kicking down doors. I hope we never have to resort.
A little bit of Lowest of the Low here on your All Request Friday on the Mike Farwell Show. Song called Subversives. Lowest of the Low played Sonic Hall in Guelph last Saturday, and they are here by request this morning from Dean on the show. I want to go back to an email I received earlier today from Lori when we were talking about encampments and the 12 big city mayors, including the mayor of Cambridge, who have signed on to a letter asking that the provincial government invoke the notwithstanding clause so that municipalities have the power not only to clear encampments from public spaces, but also move people into treatment for their mental health or addictions, whether they want to go to that treatment or not. And Lori invokes K.W. Elvis, who recently passed away and who lived in supportive housing. If it wasn't for that housing, Lori says via email to Mike at 570news.com, he would have been living on the street. The home he was in was torn down. There's now a new home in place. I have a cousin who would have been on the street due to injuries to her brain at childbirth. She lived with her parents, but as they got older, they made sure she was in supportive housing. This seems like a good idea. I don't think they are a lesser person, as was described by Regional Councillor Rob Deutschman when he called in earlier. But as a taxpayer, Lori says, I have rights too. There are some things in life we don't like to do, but we have to do them. Again, this is the struggle, and it's very real in our communities today. All right, the Kitchener Rangers will struggle to keep their 7-game winning streak alive. In fact, to extend it tonight to an 8th game as they welcome the high-powered Sudbury Wolves to the Memorial Auditorium. The Coaches Show and the Other Coaches Show coming up for you here on the Mike Farwell Show this morning, 570 News Radio. That is the song you hear when the Rangers score a goal, and that means you got to hear that song 6 times on Tuesday night as the Rangers won their 7th in a row, 6-1, over the Sarnia Sting. Every Friday morning at this time, we're joined by Rangers head coach UC Ahokas for the Coaches Show. Good morning, UC.
Oh, morning.
What is it that has helped your team be successful for seven straight games and really all of October, no regulation losses? What is the team doing so well?
I think we played a good structure game, defended well. All in all, goalies were good. PK, I thought our PK was really good. And then power plays going in the right direction the whole time. So that's we have a chance to win then.
I know you weren't thrilled with the first period on Tuesday night, but the game got better from there. What improved in periods two and three?
Well, just managing the pucks, like being smarter with the puck, playing and not turning pucks over, and then just winning a little bit more stick battles. I think that was a big key.
When the team is playing as well as it has been playing, you see a lot of people start talking about it. There are headlines about the team being in first place. I know you don't care about things like that. You want to see where the team is at the end of the season. But how do you manage the team during a winning streak like this to keep them focused?
No, you have to go game by game and not get big-headed or anything and remember why we won, like what's our core and what's our identity, and stick to that. And if we do that, I think still good things will happen, and if you put your foot off the gas, you'll be losing fast. So I'm not really. We're going game by game.
What would you say is the identity of this team?
Well, we're a hardworking, working team. We defend. We play a structured game. We work, and all in all, like there's a lot of things for our identity. But we play team. Me. Always we before me, so that's I think that would be the fastest way to tell you what's our identity.
You had, because of injuries and suspensions, Alexander Bilecki playing up front as a forward on Tuesday night. How did you feel about that?
Well, he had a good chance to show his skills in forward, and, you know, in long season you have to. And when things happen, everybody has to be able to jump into different spots. And I think he filled his role well as a 16-year-old.
Is it difficult, UC, to play with a lineup that kind of gets, you know, patched together with players out with injuries, suspensions, et cetera? Is it difficult to, you know, get everybody going in the right direction, game in and game out?
Well, of course you want your guys to be healthy and know, but that's hockey. You have to manage it, and it happens to every team. And then you just have to be aware and just go through things a little bit more with the guys in the court taking new spots in the lineup. And that's, I would say, but it's not ideal, but you have to do it.
The Sudbury Wolves are in Kitchener tonight, and just in time for their arrival, Quentin Musty is back, a first rounder to the National Hockey League. So that's another talented player that you have to defend against tonight. What do you have to do to be successful against Sudbury?
Well, Sudbury, they have a new coach. They're a hardworking team. They want to compete and battle. But I think their forecheck's good, so we have to be able to break out and really go to the pucks fast and kind of have our great spots when we were able to break out. And then and D-zone, they play man-on-man, so you have to be able to win your one-on-one battles and you get moving and get to the net that you have a chance of winning. But I think it'll be a really tough game tonight.
Getting to the net seems to be something that your players up and down the lineup are willing to do. Is that important to success?
Well, if you don't go there, you won't stand a chance of winning. So, yeah, you have to go to the hard areas and be able to play there. Everybody can play outside, but who can play in the hard areas? Usually those guys are who win and succeed.
Looking forward to another Friday night at the Odd. UC, we'll see you at the rink. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot, and have a good day.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
UC Ahokas, head coach of the Kitchener Rangers. You go to the net, you do the hard things, you tend to be successful. This team's identity is we, not me. I like that philosophy. Fastest way, he says, he could describe it. And you talk about the new coach with the Sudbury Wolves, Scott Barney, former NHLer and had coached in Humboldt. He was the guy. He was the glue guy, if you will, that kept that Humboldt Broncos team and community together after that terrible bus tragedy so many years ago. But Scott Barney, now the head coach in Sudbury, brings the Wolves and Quentin Musty into town tonight. They do have some weapons up front, the Sudbury Wolves do, but the Kitchener Rangers, as you just heard from head coach UC Ahokas, defend well. They've been getting solid goaltending, and you put those things together, and it generally leads to success. And success is what the Kitchener Rangers have had for a month now. They have not lost a game since their final game of September on the 28th. That was a Saturday night in Windsor. Since then, they haven't lost in regulation since then. Since that time, 10 victories, an overtime loss, and a shootout loss. So an unblemished October, if you will, when it comes to regulation losses for the hockey club. And Kitchener not only finds itself in first place in the league, but it's riding a 7-game winning streak coming into action tonight. If you can't be there at the Memorial Auditorium, we have got you covered right here on 570 News Radio. Paul Fixter and I will start with your Harris Law pregame show at 6:30. We will continue right through the broadcast, bringing you all of the action and entertainment. And then we'll stay deep into the night, as we always do on Fridays. Actually, we do it after every home game, opening up the phone lines for you on the USave Flooring Rangers Talk postgame show. So Paul and I have got you covered if you can't be at the rink. But heck, if you can be, you're going to be in for a treat. There is no question about that. From the coach's show with head coach UC Ahokas to the other coach's show, because Paul Fixter, you know, was a former coach in this league, the Ontario Hockey League. He's got a couple of Stanley Cup rings from Colorado in the NHL. And the other coach, Paul Fixter, joins us right after this on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Ah, nuts. I forgot to ask Fixie if he wanted intro music today, walk-up music for the other coach. Paul Fixter is our color commentator on Kitchener Rangers broadcasts on 570 News Radio and joins us every Friday morning at this time for the other coach's show. After hearing from the head coach, Fixie joins us to tee up tonight's game. Morning, Fixie.
Appropriate that you said tee up, because I am out of Westmount Golf and Country playing golf, as I always do, Mike.
Come on. November the 1st and you're out on the links.
Well, we have until November. We close on Sunday, so I'm getting as many rounds in as I can.
Attaboy. You remember what I told you about Sunday. I know it's a tradition for you to get out there on the final day, so if you can make it, you get out there.
All right, thanks, buddy.
Let me start with this. I was talking before the commercial break that you, too, are a former coach in this league and the National League. Any feelings with the Sudbury Wolves still? That was the last stop for you in the OHL, and here they come to town tonight.
You know what? It was really emotional for me last year when we went back there for the first time, or my first time being back there. I think that's kind of past now, Mike. But you know, there's still a bit of hey, I want to see the Rangers beat them. Let's put it that way.
That is fair.
They moved my behind out of town, not by choice from me. So I want the Rangers to win.
I recall that trip up there last season, and we had the luxury of time. There was a little bit of extra time, and I remember those walks around the arena and your chance to sit down with some of the brass up there and reconnect after all those years. It was pretty cool to witness from afar. Let's get to the matter at hand. And when I asked UC Ahokas a moment ago what it is that's made his team successful lately and how he would describe the team's identity, he said something that really stuck with me. He said it's about we, not me. And I think we've seen that from the team, haven't we, Paul?
We certainly have, Mike. It's a tight-knit group. And I can understand that, because when we interview the players, they don't talk about themselves. They talk about their line mates, the team, the play of others, not the play of themselves. And I can understand that. And it really is a group effort. And when you look, I think it was Josh Brown who mentioned this the other day to us, that we're the only team that every forward has scored at least one goal. At least it was at that point. So that says something about they're all in it together.
You noticed something in that regard on Tuesday night as well, when the Rangers started to run away a little bit from the Sarnia Sting. They were up 4-0 at one point. They win 6-1. But in games like that, what we sometimes see is players thinking, oh, this is a night for me to pad my stats and go out there and try to get as many points as possible. And we didn't really, well, you certainly identified that you didn't notice that from the team on Tuesday.
No, there was no selfishness in the play of the individual players. It was all about, as the coach said, we. And you could see that. And in the end, Mike, they did get 6 goals and a bunch of assists. So players got their points anyway. So if you continue to play the right way, you're going to get those opportunities. It's funny, when you get away from that and you start playing for yourself, playing for selfish reasons, I suppose, the game can slip away on you. And the game never was close to slipping away on the Rangers. They were in complete control from start to finish.
How do you tune out the noise, Paul? And by that I mean the Canadian Hockey League has continued to overlook the Kitchener Rangers in the top 10 rankings, which is fine. They're not going to care. We know they don't care. But you can't run away from the headlines that point out that it is a first-place team. First place in the Ontario Hockey League, more points than any other team, the Kitchener Rangers. 7 wins in a row, an entire month of October without a regulation loss. How do you tune out that noise to keep players focused on what's really important here, which is the next 2 points?
Well, that's a great question, Mike, because I remember asking Ben Boudreaux that when we played Niagara and they were coming in here number 8. Nobody had the expectations for him and for that team. And he said it really is a problem for him right now to deal with. The players' heads are getting a little bit bigger. And so I think because UC has made it not important in his interviews that he does with you and myself, he's getting that message through to the players that, you know, individual success or team success is important. And if we don't get recognized for it, we don't really care. We'll just go about our business. And he keeps emphasizing, Mike, it's at the end of the year. Where are we going to be at the end of the year? And the plan is progress for them and executing on a game-to-game basis. And if they get the recognition or not, they don't really care. How do you tune it out? You just keep reinforcing it, Mike. You don't let the players' heads get too big, and if they do start to get big, well, you bring them back to size.
One of the storylines we'll be following within the game tonight is the return of Quentin Mustie. He had been staying home. He wanted a trade out of Sudbury. The Wolves responded with a statement saying, listen, this player still got some things to work on. We're ready to work on those things with him. He's welcome back anytime. And just in time for his trip to Kitchener, Quentin Mustie is back with the Wolves.
Well, hopefully he's more like Quentin Rusty because he has been playing. Because he is a pretty good player, and he adds to that lineup. He does have things to work on. And, you know, I was surprised, actually, that a 19-year-old would go down that road and not play and demand a trade. And, you know, if you demand a trade, it's one thing, but come around and still play. You have lots. He has a lot to improve upon, no question about it. But that's a great addition for Sudbury. It's just a question of how game ready is he going to be.
What hole are you on? How's the course out there today?
You always number 4, Mike, and I'm on number 4 right now. It's a little windy, so I'm hoping it's not sounding too bad. But the weather, Jill Taylor was right when she said about the weather today. She was bang on. It's chilly and windy.
All right. Well, listen, you finish up. Don't be late for game time, and we'll see you at the rink later on.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Thanks, Fixie. Paul Fixter on number 4 at Westmount. When I come back in my next life, I want to be Paul Fixter. I love the game of golf. I'm terrible at it, but maybe if I got to play as often as Fixie does, I'd get a little bit better. That is the other coaches show that we do every Friday morning to get you set for the game tonight at the Memorial Auditorium, because you know what it's like in this town, right? Fridays are game days in the city of Kitchener. We've got Rangers and Wolves tonight at the Kitchener Memorial Auditorium, and our full long night of coverage starts at 6:30 for you. Paul and I will be on the air from our broadcast booth, the David Schooley Broker with REMAX Twin City broadcast booth, tonight at 6:30 right here on 570 News Radio. We'll take a break. Your Friday 4 roundtable is just around the corner to talk about the week's big stories. All of that still to come on the Mike Farwell Show this morning. 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Fridays are the stuff of tradition here on the program. And just like it's the tradition of hockey day in the city, and we get you set for the Rangers game every Friday night at the Kitchener Memorial Auditorium, we have recurring segments on the show every Friday, like Council Chambers, where we talk to one of our municipal politicians, do a deeper dive into their part of our region. We have Free Phones Friday from noon until 1, a chance to close out the week together, hearing your opinions and things that are on your mind for the final hour. And then, of course, there is 11 until noon, and that is our Friday 4 Roundtable. It's been a fixture here on the station for years. It's a chance to invite some guests to join us for a panel discussion of the week's big stories, including this week. We will talk about the Federal Conservative Party's plan to spur housing construction. Let's eliminate the GST on homes, or at least, I guess, make them more affordable for people looking to buy. Also, a new plan in Guelph that's been put into place by police. More officers in the downtown patrolling to crack down on the drug trade in the city of Guelph. City of Kitchener, as you know, is pushing back a little bit on the region's speed camera rollout. Kitchener says, you know what, you can do you, Region of Waterloo, but we want to manage what happens on streets under our jurisdiction without your interference when it comes to speed cameras. And then it's the $200 rebate check that's coming your way. What are you going to do with it when it arrives in your bank account? So we'll talk about all of those stories with our Friday 4 Roundtable in the next hour. Right here on the Mike Farwell Show, this is 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Well, this is going to be an interesting hour, not only because it always is when our guests join us to talk about the big stories of the week, but because I've already been busted eating more Halloween candy. It's true, I put one more piece down my gullet before we started our roundtable discussion. And Jane Mitchell, a former regional councillor who's scheduled to be one of our guests, is clearly having internet troubles up in Bruce County. I don't know what that's all about, but it's Bruce County, so you would expect that in a smaller municipality, right? And then David Drew, who's a regular on this show, I think he's just got the wrong service provider, because I know he's in Kitchener, and he can't. Verbanek, it's going to be you and me today, by the looks of things.
It's going to be a haunting experience, because David's already been doing Ghost in the Machine stuff for the last 5 minutes. So.
When I saw David Drew try to log in a second time, I knew we were in some kind of trouble.
I think we're working on time number 4 or 5 right now. So, yeah.
All right. Bob Verbanek is a former journalist and editor. He is currently an instructor at Conestoga College. Jane, we're waiting for her entry, and I've seen David pop in and out, but since I've not seen anything but a still frame on him, I'm not sure he's actually here. I see his box on the screen, but I can't get anything more from him. So, Robert, let's you and I begin the conversation, because if there is one big issue in this community, in this province, in this country right now, it is the issue of housing, and federal conservative leader Pierre Poilievre seems to think he's got a plan that will run counter to the federal government's plan of the day, the government of the day, for no GST on homes that are sold for less than $1 million. Is this a plan that takes us in the right direction?
The way you say $1 million, it sounds like Austin Powers, too. So it's interesting. So I know there's already a new home buyer's rebate for GST if you're a first-time homeowner, right? So that gets rebated back. So it's an extension of that program. But if you're looking at the average price of housing quickly approaching $1 million, you wonder how the efficacy of this, how many homes will it actually cover off? I'm sure it is a boost for new homeowners, first-time homeowners. Obviously, the ones who don't want to get into the, but everything seems to be $1 million now. I just got a notice on our street of a house that went up, just got listed for one down and around the corner for 1.6. So I'm going, I didn't know I lived in Millionaire's Row, because I sure don't feel like it. So, it's an interesting proposal. We know housing is going to be the dominant issue. It's one of the dominant issues in the U.S. election, too. So any kind of break or reprieve on that is going to be good news. But how effective is it going to be? That's the real question.
A house on our street went for $50,000 over $1 million a couple of years ago. So I felt similarly, Bob. Yeah. David Drew, thoughts on the conservative plan? No GST on homes sold for less than $1 million.
We talked about this on Monday, and I missed something important then that we're not talking about here. This is on new builds only. This isn't on any resale properties. This is not on, this is on new homes. So I was a bit skeptical about it on Monday, you might recall. But then I heard Mike Moffitt talking about it, who's infinitely smarter than I am. And he said, in no way is this the solution. But there are a lot of marginal projects that were on ice that will probably be moved forward now, just like when they took the HST off new apartment builds. It's not that it was a huge, huge game changer, but there were projects on the margins that all of a sudden became viable and attractive. So I really like it. I see nothing wrong with it, but it's not the panacea in and of itself.
What about the fact, David, that the Housing Accelerator Fund goes bye-bye when this plan, should this plan be implemented?
That's a really interesting piece of it. You hear the two sides of it. One is, you know, oh, well, even the conservative MPs were accessing the fund. And it's like, well, if there's pork on the table, we're going to, you know, show up with our fork. That's the rule of politicking. You're not going to leave your constituents' money on the table. And then the other side of it is that is supposed to be lowering development charges, but you look at a lot of these cities and they're raising their development charges anyway. And then this leads us to an even bigger discussion about what is appropriate for to be funded by development charges and what should be funded by the taxpayer. But no. I'm not so worried about that fund, because as much as I'm sure it will make a difference and it is helpful, I'm sure it's not the be all and end all. And I'm also not, I'm sure that something conservative-ish will come along to replace it as well.
I will say that when it comes to the both sides of this, that when the announcement was made by Pierre Poilievre earlier this week, that there would be no GST on newly built homes under $1 million. He did have it costed out. Whether you agree with the elimination of the Housing Accelerator Fund, and I'm sorry that I'm forgetting the other program that he said he would eliminate, but he had it costed. This would essentially be revenue neutral. This money spent, other money saved. I'll give him credit for that. Jane Mitchell from beautiful Bruce County this morning. What do you make of Poilievre's announcement?
Well, it is interesting. And it's below $1 million. And in my neighborhood, the houses are below $1 million because they're smaller houses. And I believe up here in King Carden, they are below $1 million. So it would affect, but it's only new development, which around my daughter's neighborhood, there are a lot of new houses going up because, oh, she says, which are probably $1 million. She is just, it depends. It depends. Okay. But my concern, of course, is the elimination of the other fund, because having a look at that and the letters going out to London, a lot of that is going to homelessness and nonprofits. And so that would concern me. So if they could figure out a new conservative fund or fund it a different way, it's probably good. Also, if it goes to developers, it is under $1 million. Yeah, a lot of the houses probably aren't affordable housing. So, yeah, it's a good idea, but caveats.
For sure. And as David just mentioned, it's not the panacea that some might think it is. But Bob, I'll just throw this back to you. If it gets some of those, as David described a moment ago, marginal projects moving again, I mean, it is moving supply, right? That's got to be part of the equation here, the supply versus demand.
I'm always interested in how policy gets created. If they actually did consultation, they did discussion, and then heard from the people who are developing that type of housing, where this would incentivize that, that's great. Instead of being the top-down approach and saying, hey, here's an alternative, a different program with a different name, that's going to offer solutions that don't solve problems too. So I'm always into research-based decision-making. And if it came from that kind of a place, I'm happy with it. We could live with it, but it really should drive results, right? So if it doesn't, then it's ineffective, right?
Bob Verbanek, David Drew, and Jane Mitchell are with us on our Friday 4 roundtable this morning. Everybody got here just in time to have their say on topic number one, but we do four of these in each one of our Friday 4 hours on Friday mornings from 11 until noon. What do we make of what police in Guelph are doing? Cracking down on drugs by increasing patrols, but are we criminalizing addiction? We'll talk about it as we continue our Friday 4 roundtable this morning on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio, and Rogers TV. With us around the virtual table this morning, David Drew, who is the owner of Negotiating Change Government Relations Stakeholder Engagement Strategies. Jane Mitchell is a former regional councillor representing Waterloo. And Bob Verbanek, a former journalist and editor, now an instructor at Conestoga College. Let's talk about what they're doing in Guelph. And police have said this is not by political direction. They have taken this upon themselves to increase patrols in the downtown, given the amount of drug use and drug selling that has been noticed there and complained about. David Drew, I'll start with you on this one. Good idea. Is this something that other cities should be following suit on?
Let's wait and see. No, like, honestly, it just sort of seems like one of those things that 30 years ago would have been done right away. And now we look at it and there's all these reasons why we shouldn't do it. But I have no idea whether it's going to work or not, and how they implement it is going to make a big difference. You know, is this leading with enforcement or is this leading with a kind hand? I don't know whether it's going to work or not, but I do not think, like you said before the break, it's criminalizing addiction. I think it's criminalizing poverty.
Okay. Yeah.
If you get high at home, they're never going to bother you. But if you have no home to get high in, you're out on the streets. That's what they're criminalizing.
Excellent point. And I also like your point, David, because I was thinking similarly when you said 30 years ago, we wouldn't have given this a second thought. 30 years ago, this wouldn't even be something I think that gets reported, right? This is basically enforcing the laws that are on the books, but we just take a different approach to that these days.
It almost feels like we forgot common sense. And I say almost, because whenever you sit down and you think about it, there's good reasons why we're hesitating and we're doing all these things in a very circumspect way. But you can sit there and list all of these reasons, and the longer and longer the list gets, the more you're like, yeah, just send in the cops.
And I think that's why we're at the tipping point we are currently at. I truly believe that. I think you summed it up perfectly with the length of that list and the reasons that we've got for not enforcing the laws. And they're very good. They're sound. They're reasonable. However, that list is so lengthy. And now we've got, for example, something we've already talked about on the show this morning. The dozen mayors, including the mayor of Cambridge, of large cities in this province, asking Premier Ford, calling him on his own bluff, if you will, okay, give us that notwithstanding clause. Let us clear encampments. Let us put people into treatment against their will, etc. Jane, I'll bring it over to you as a former regional councillor. This might have landed right on your desk at one point.
Yeah, it might have, being homelessness. And I do not believe that, it doesn't work when you put people in jail. They come out again. And forcing people to go into mental health treatment does not work. They do the treatment, they come out, they start. You've got to want to give up your addiction, which is the problem. I think we look at other places like Finland, where they've almost eliminated homelessness. And part of the way they've done that, which is part of, and I know you were talking on your Before My Radio Went Away when I got in your King Carden, you were talking about how, you know, we need to have take over motels and so on, which of course House of Friendship has done with their new shelter. And that is really helping. And you've got to have, when you have the shelters and you have the new, they're working on new social housing. And they, I was just at their dinner and they were talking about the EB Town, the EB thing, and how it's a community and how they have mental health supports, which I think any kind of treatment or anything to get rid of homelessness, you've got to have homes for them and you have to have treatment to help them with their addictions and with the mental health, underlying mental health problems, or you're just going nowhere. You're just getting a revolving door. They're going to go into their tents are going to be thrown away. They're going to go into jail. They'll come out of jail, or they may not even go to jail because it's just minor stuff as far as the judicial system's considered. They're not actually, you know, drug dealers. And, you know, you just have a revolving door and they'll set up their tents someplace else. It's just, you got to get to the roots of the problem. And that's my opinion.
David Drew, I see you shaking your head.
Well, actually, I wanted to jump in. And I agreed with David earlier that this is about selective enforcement, right? We have the laws on the books, and we always have. This is just an application of that. I think this case is, I'm waiting to see too, because the first two arrests were actually of people who were drug dealers. So that's a difference, right? To say, hey, listen, maybe we address the supply and get that off the street first too, right? So, and I know they followed it up with putting notices of evictions on the tents in St. George's Square last night. And Cam Guthrie made a good point. Everyone who was served an eviction notice was also contacted and offered placement, right? They were offered shelter. The fact that they didn't choose to go then gives at least the city that out to say that, hey, we had a spot for them. We can actually effectively enforce this now, right? Because that's what that legal opinion was that, hey, you can't force them off the site if there's nowhere to go. But if there is somewhere to go, then that should be that workaround. It's you know what? I think a lot of people are frustrated about the lack of action. They're looking for differences in terms of approaches. I agree. Policing is the last line of what you want to do here. They're not the social worker. They're not the social safety net. But at a certain time, community standards apply. And if you have to, I think in this case, to see how it will work out and if it does change behavior or just does change some of the what's being done or what's being seen, maybe that's the incentive to push a little of that change through.
I think you make a very good point, Bob. And I also heard Mayor Cam Guthrie in Guelph's comments, and I thought they were courageous in the current political climate for sure, insofar as we have worked with these people. We have offered shelter spaces, but those shelter spaces were deemed unsuitable for any reason. I don't think that we have enough shelter spaces entirely. However, I'm positive that there are existing shelter spaces that go unused for a variety of reasons. And that's where we get into this back and forth. But David, I saw you shaking your head before. I just want to come back to you before the break.
Well, I'm just very, very quickly, I'm curious what happens if you are a homeless person who gets a ticket for illegal drug use in St. George's Square and you can't pay a fine?
I don't think anything does. But I really think that what Bob said is something to remember here. I'm not sure that this increase in patrols in Guelph was meant to crack down so much on the users as it was the dealers. And that's where the charges have been laid so far.
I think the biggest audience is the people who live and work in that neighborhood. They want a difference to be seen. I think Bob was absolutely right there. People want something to be done. And maybe this is not the brightest thing, like Jane was saying, but it's something. And that's all we want right now.
David Drew, Jane Mitchell, and Bob Verbanek are with us on the Friday 4 Roundtable this morning. We continue our conversations here on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio, and Rogers TV. We have with us on the Friday 4 Roundtable this morning, Jane Mitchell, Bob Verbanek, and David Drew. We've talked about eliminating the GST on newly built homes sold for less than $1 million, and a crackdown on drug use in downtown Guelph. Right now, we'll get you an update from the 570 News Center. And then, City of Kitchener pushes back on the region's speed camera rollout. And what are you going to do with that $200 rebate? You know Galen Weston's getting one too, don't you know? We'll talk about that with our Friday 4 roundtable as we continue on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. With us on the Friday 4 roundtable today, Jane Mitchell, who's a former regional counselor, Bob Verbanek, a former journalist and editor, instructor now at Conestoga College, and David Drew, in keeping with the theme of former Conservative Party staffer federally, now the owner of Negotiating Change, Government Relations, Stakeholder Engagement Strategies. Jane, I'll start with you on this next one. And again, something that very well could have landed on your desk at a time ago in that former political life of yours. But the region has a rather aggressive speed camera program that is in the midst, the early stages of its rollout. The plan is to have 175 cameras around the region by 2028. And it also means that speed fines will be doubled in community safety zones, and those community safety zones will be patrolled 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Yes, even on Christmas and outside of school hours, if that community safety zone is also a school zone. City of Kitchener says, nuh-uh, we're not having any of this. What do you think of where we're at and what the region is trying to do with automated speed enforcement?
Well, when they first started to do it, I got dinged because I had to go to Laurelwood to take my grandson his boots. And it was, that's 30 kilometers an hour.
What were you driving? Do you remember?
So you have to be very careful around those schools.
How fast were you driving?
I was driving 40.
40. Wow.
40.
That's pretty harsh. Yeah.
Yeah. And the fine was not good. So doubling the fines, I'm not thrilled about. I am very much for, though. I am actually for having the cameras in front of the schools because of the many problems that there are with speeders in front of schools, particularly if they're on a major street, like, you know, I'm trying to think of a school that's on a major street, but there are some, even Laurelwood and so on, where people are rushing to work after they've dropped the kids off and stuff. I don't know if they can get the cameras to only work when the kids are there. That would be my question, because I can understand that, you know, you're not wanting it during Christmas or when the kids aren't there. I'm just not sure whether you could do that and whether that also would encourage people to not to think, oh, well, I didn't get a ticket this time. I probably won't get a ticket next time. So that would be my only concern. But even though I got dinged, I am certainly okay with them actually being in front of the schools. I think it's a good safety measure.
I would hope that we can just turn the cameras on and off at our own discretion. Yeah. And when it comes to those busier streets, I think you raise a good point. Forest Hill Public School is a good example in Kitchener. Yeah. It's on West Mount Road. That's a regional road. What Kitchener is saying is, you know what, when it's in our jurisdiction, when the street belongs to us as a city, we want control over that. But Bob, what do you think?
No, what they're saying is we want some of the money from the fines. That's what they're really saying.
That too. But they also have said, like, if it's on, I'm thinking like Heritage Drive or something in Kitchener, the city wants that. Like, that doesn't want the region to control the camera there. It wants to control its own. So,
right. And the local councillor also doesn't want the blowback if it's a regional camera and to get blamed for the fact that it, you know, they're going to be taking the bullet for the fact that they're getting fined, and they're going to blame their city council, not their regional council, for it too.
Right.
So yeah, I drive by these cameras all the time, and I haven't been dinged yet, Jane. So I'm one up on you.
Yeah, and I gotta say too that when people complained, and I have had in the past when I was a counselor, people complain about the speeding. My response was, well, go in the proper speed, do the proper speed. And we can chat about whether 30 kilometers per hour in front of schools is too low or not, you know.
Yeah. And I'm with the fact that, you know, maybe these cameras should be turned off at the non-peak times. Like, I take a route through St. Clements all the time, and there's a camera there. When the school's not in session, I mean, I think 50 is reasonable to go through there. Even though it's 40, it's like, I know that the argument is it's revenue neutral, but anytime we see, especially the numbers they're suggesting, I don't see how that's a revenue neutral process. Right. So I think, and I get it. Like, you're looking for alternative sources of income, even for different levels of government. But I don't think farming it out to this is one of the ways to do it.
City of Kitchener talked about a $21 million surplus right now in the photo radar fund, if you will, so far from revenue neutral. Your St. Clement's example makes me think of Bridgeport Road and Waterloo too, Bob, which I think is there's a French school there where the limit drops to 40 in the school zone. And I'll tell you what, I was just on Bridgeport the other night. Ain't nobody doing 40. So that, I don't think the camera's active there yet, but the signs are there, and it would be obviously a place where a camera will eventually be.
Yeah.
Yeah. David, your thoughts.
There's no reason they have to give out the tickets 24/7, whether the camera gets turned off or they only send out the ones that were taken between a time and a time. There's no reason they have to automatically send out every ticket that is taken at 3 a.m. They could even reset the thing so the tolerance changes. So, you know, in that 40 zone, you're getting a ticket at 50 during the daytime, but you're not getting one until 60 at night. There's a million ways that they can deal with this problem that are reasonable. But I do wonder if the city of Kitchener would be pursuing these control issues if they also weren't interested in the money. I just sort of feel like it's a little bit of populism washing, so to speak.
Yeah. We haven't heard that one. Yeah, well, and yeah. Jane, look, you sat on regional council. This David and Bob brought up the same point, and you referenced it earlier too. Like, City of Kitchener wants control of its own program, wants the revenue from that, not letting the parental government here, if you will, the upper tier, dictate for it how things go. Did you see that much when you were on regional council?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, always there's that come and go of between the cities and the region. And I know you want us to kind of lean into maybe we should have a regional government, but
yeah, you know we should, Jane.
That's where Mike was going.
There's stuff going on between the region and the cities. Yeah.
I think that Jane made a good point earlier, too, about whether or not 30 is reasonable slash too slow in front of a school. Councillor Jason Deneau in Kitchener made the point at Kitchener Council the other night that if you look at the data, you'll find that the most dangerous intersections where the greatest number of collisions occur are not, like, none of them are school zones. So if this is really in the interests of safety, why aren't we putting red light cameras at intersections or speed cameras on places where there are so many speeders and or collisions?
Mike, why don't you care about our children's safety?
I know. And this is it. And here's my new thing. And I'm going to get a T-shirt that says this. You say safety, I spend money. Like, all you have to do is invoke safety and we just throw all the money at you. Oh, it's unsafe. Okay, here, take the money. Like, well, I don't know. It's kind of like the tipping point we talked about earlier, and I think I've reached my safety tipping point. And I guess, David, you're right. I just don't care about the kids. I gave them candy last night, but I don't care about them.
Well, I think you have to remember, too, in my neighborhood, they've got a petition going around for High Point, which is near where McEachran School is, but not the actual school. It's Roman Hills. And they want to have a light there or a stop sign or a camera, because a woman's dog was killed, and they do speed along High Point. Oh my gosh. So, you know, there is a safety factor there. And
yeah. And the dogs, I mean, I care about the dogs.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And I there was some research I saw that was interesting though, that suggested, you know, the survivability of being hit by a car at 50 kilometers per hour is like 15%, where you got a 70% chance at 40. So, like, there is some science behind it, which I appreciate, some research behind why they've decided to do it that way. But I don't think the cameras themselves are scientific. I think they're definitely meant to be a revenue generator. Because what are they saying? We're farming out enforcement to these poles, right? So that's essentially what they're doing, right?
If they
turn the revenue around and said, hey, we're doing active enforcement, maybe I'd support that more, right? So, yeah.
I've read that same research around the survivability depending on speed of vehicle. But if there are no collisions, if nobody is getting hit on that particular street, well, your survivability is 100% then. Bob Verbanek, David Drew, and Jane Mitchell with us on our Friday 4 roundtable this morning. Let's find out how they're going to spend their bonus $200. The province is going to give out a rebate check next year. Our Friday 4 roundtable continues on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio, and Rogers TV. With us around the virtual table this morning, Bob Verbanek, David Drew, and Jane Mitchell. I did not notice until just now, Mr. Verbanek. Excellent hoodie/hockey jersey there. Well done. It's the combination of both by the looks of things. Kitchener, not New York Rangers, right? Attaboy.
Correct.
Attaboy. Rangers home to the Sudbury Wolves tonight. Bob Verbanek, your starting goalie. Oh, he'd be an overager by now. Let's talk about that rebate we are getting. And by we, I mean all of us here in Ontario, including millionaires, multimillionaires like Galen Weston. He's going to get the $200 rebate check next year, too. Bob, I'll start with you. What do you think of the gesture from your buddy Doug Ford?
We've seen it play out before where we're bribed with our own money. The windfall here came from the excess tax revenue caused by all that inflation we've enjoyed the last few years. So, I just don't understand when governments see windfalls like that. And I get the philosophy of, hey, let's return it to the taxpayer. It's their money. But at the same time, we know the needs around the province at the same time. We know the demands and the fact that our health system hasn't recovered from COVID. We're still trying to bail that system out too. So I think there are better priorities than to help make sure that I can cover off a little bit of my grocery bill in January next year. So I think you know what, it's a self-defeating process because we're worried about inflation. That's an inflationary process for the government to give us money like that and fuel inflation again like that too as well. So it's almost like we're doing these self-defeating cycles and you wonder if maybe we can just take the politicking out of it and put the reality back in and saying, hey, listen, that money is better used somewhere else.
Life is politics. Politicking will always be around. It makes this show go round for sure. David, your thoughts on your rebate upcoming?
It's not just an inflation windfall. It's also the federal government is making changes to the capital gains rules, which will not only benefit the federal coffers, they will also benefit Ontario coffers. So this was like literally manna from heaven. The issue is, you guys may have heard that Parliament has been filibustered. So the legislation that will pass these capital gains changes is all tied up, and we don't know when or if it's going to pass. So some of this money that they're spending may not come in. But does it matter? It's all borrowed money anyway. Like, this is just it. They're not giving us our money back. They're giving us our grandkids' kids' money.
Sure.
This is not all of a sudden we're in a surplus position and we can afford to give it back. It's like, hey, guess what? The credit card bill is only 80 grand this month instead of the 83 we were expecting. So let's split the difference. It's drunky math. But also, like I said on Monday, that check had better be arriving within a day of the election day, because my vote might be rented for 36 hours, but my attention span's not much longer than that for $200.
That's a really good point. I love on the grandkids' kids, maybe we should take our $200, invest it, and bequeath it to our children and their children and see how the $200 does for them down the road. Jane, your thoughts?
Well, I don't think the $200 will do a lot for them down the road because inflation will still continue. So you might as well spend it on your groceries, I guess, which is another whole question because food prices are so high. But like the other people, I really would have liked to have seen that money go into health or education and not. I know it's going to make them look good for the election. But I also agree with David that people, as far as elections go, people's memories are very short, and you only get their attention within a month or two, within an actual election, which probably means that we've got an election coming up. But yeah, it's, you know, it really, if you're going to spend the money, it should go into health and education.
We do have an election coming up next spring, right? This is happening.
You can't get much more of a signal than this, Mike. Right?
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do have to think, though, that as much as all of us are kind of pooping on this, just the fact that we are talking about the fact that Doug Ford is going to give every Ontarian $200 is somehow a win for that government, even though we're all saying, eh, not a good idea.
Are we getting checks with his name on it, though?
Oh, probably.
Well, and that's the way we've come to describe governments today anyway, right? I don't remember when this exactly changed, but there was a time, I would remember that time, where it was the Conservative government in Ontario, but now it's the Doug Ford government. And prior to that, it was the Kathleen Wynne or Dalton McGuinty government. It's the Justin Trudeau or Stephen Harper government, et cetera, et cetera. That changed at some point. I think many do feel that Doug is their buddy and he's cutting, like, it's Doug Ford that's making this happen for you.
And there's also all those changes with alcohol, all the different, you know, now you can buy. I went to wash my car the other day, and I went in to buy the car wash. And the first thing I saw was a whole thing of beer and wine that you
can
buy at the gas station. It's like, what?
How much did you buy, Jane?
Yeah.
Zero.
Okay.
I had my grandkids in the car, and we were going through the car wash. Come on.
Is drinking and washing legal?
Probably.
It crossed my mind. I would not obviously endorse it because you're behind the wheel, but what a great way to kill the time while you're getting your car washed is have a nice cold one, right? I do it at home. I'm not driving the car then. David, go ahead.
I really don't
With
have
my
a problem.
Grandkids in the car? I don't think so.
I really don't have a problem with the booze being in all these newer locations and things like that. Like I said, you know, I don't picture myself taking advantage of this increased convenience very often. But when I do, I'll appreciate it.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with them being in things like the mini marts and that kind of thing, because I think those particular small businesses have been suffering because people don't smoke anymore. So now they have another sin, if you will, that people can take advantage of that will help them live. Yeah.
If you drive the 401 now, they have those signs above the en routes that, you know, can change because they're all extra bright LEDs, and they will say cold beer available here.
Wow.
So it's the part where I have a little bit of a, you know, the whole advertising it on the 401, like the LCBO can't put out a sign like that.
True. And it's so this is tied back into my buddy Doug's taking care of me. He's making sure I've got beer, and now he's giving me the money to buy it.
There you go. And it's cold beer at that, as we've just learned from David Drew. All right. The clock tells me it's time to let our friends go for another week. Really appreciate them joining us on the program. Bob Verbanek, former journalist and editor, now an instructor at Conestoga College. David Drew, the owner of Negotiating Change. And Jane Mitchell, a former regional counselor. Thank you all for making time for our show today, and enjoy the weekend ahead.
Have a great one.
This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Oh, a lot of fun around the virtual table today with Bob Verbanek, David Drew, and Jane Mitchell. Friday 4 is every Friday from 11 until noon when our guests banter about the week's big stories. Now you get the chance to do that same thing, whether it's the week's big stories or whatever else it is that's on your mind as we head into a weekend. It's our final hour together of the week. We spend 20 hours together every week. It's like we're best friends. Did we just become best friends? I think we did. So the next hour, we reserve the final hour of the show every week for you. Free Phones Friday, where you can call in and let us know what's on your mind. It also marks the end of our time for another day and another week with Rogers TV Cable 20. So thank you very much to that group of volunteers and staff who produce the TV side of this show from 10 until noon every day. I'm going to send you to the 570 News Center for an update. And then Devin Robertson, our guy on the other side of the glass, opens the phones for Free Phones Friday. Give us a call right now on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. And so long, Rogers TV.
Take out the papers and the trash. Or you don't get no spending cash. If you don't scrub that kitchen floor, you ain't gonna rock and roll no more. Yaggedy yak.
Don't talk back.
Just finish cleaning up your room. Let's see that dust fly with that broom. Get all that garbage out of sight. Or you don't go out Friday night.
Hold back.
Let's start out with a quick email from Derek, who writes to Mike at 570news.com. On the speed camera issue, I actually find that they lower my attention of what's around me because I find myself looking at the speedometer more often than I should due to people I've heard getting tickets for only 1 or 2 kilometers over the limit. At the one by West Heights School, I found out that the cargo van I was driving couldn't even handle or couldn't even have the cruise set for 30. It's since been changed to 40 since the city buses were getting too many tickets. I don't know if that was actually the case, but it would be kind of funny if it was. Look, here's the thing with photo radar, okay? If you're speeding, if you're exceeding the speed limit, you deserve to be fined for that behavior. But there is no way, no how, that these cameras need to run 24/7, 365 days a year. That makes it feel like a cash grab. Even if that's not your intent, that's how it feels on the receiving end. So just revisit that part of the policy. And frankly, as was pointed out at Kitchener Council earlier this week, if it's in the interest of safety, could we maybe just consider then enhancing safety where collisions are actually occurring? Because if anybody has ever seen a school zone, they know that it's next to impossible to speed through it because school zones are chaos at the best of times. Morning drop-off, afternoon pickup, you name it. You couldn't drive fast through there if you wanted to. I guess while the kids are in class or out in the backyard of the school, sure, during the day, you might speed along that street if the limit's 30. But anyway, just turn them off after school hours. Turn them off on weekends. Don't run them during the summer or Christmas break, etc. And maybe, just maybe, give some thought to how you're calibrating them or how you're setting speeds on those particular roads in the first place. You want to know where people are getting seriously injured and or dying? On roads where the limit's 60. That's where. So anyway, we'll leave that right there. Here's my wackadoodle theory to share with you today. I am going to say that fireworks are the new Ezra Avenue. You know the argument that says Ezra Avenue has become what it's become in this region on St. Paddy's Day because it gets so much media attention? Well, as you know, we are into the Hindu Festival of Light, Diwali, and our municipalities across the region decided that you could have fireworks, but they didn't all get on the same page as to when the fireworks could be. Nonetheless, in Kitchener, fireworks were to be set off on November the 1st, which is today, but they started going off all over the ding-dang place last night, and people got upset all over the city of Kitchener's Facebook page. I'm hearing fireworks right now since I turned the TV off, and it's 10:20 p.m. on October the 31st. It's unfortunate that there is no respect for rules. Give an inch, take a mile. Fireworks are the new Ezra Avenue in this region. You allow us any opportunity for fireworks, and we will take that opportunity and then ignore all of the rules. That's just the way it goes now. I don't think everybody was celebrating the Festival of Lights last night until whatever hour they were celebrating them. But I also live in Kitchener, and the bylaw says you can have the fireworks tonight, November the 1st. I heard the fireworks last night, too. Let's get to the phones. It is the talk back hour, after all. Francis, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mike. Mine is kind of a two-part.
Okay.
The surplus.
with the $200. You don't have it. And since we are people that we have our own budgets, we know what a budget is and a balanced book, put the $200 towards that surplus towards paying down the debt and look at the interest the people would save. Now, that's my least part. Tuesday night, coming home from Kitchener from Wallacene towards Dorking, which is quite a name, we need to have a SWAT team out there. If you ever heard of SWAT. I got behind a milk truck, which was very good, a large tanker truck, and up behind me came a trucker. I found that I was doing 92, and I got so close to the tanker truck just to try to be out of the road of the truck that come behind me. All I could see in my back window was his grill. That's how close the guy was. And like you talk about having so many lengths between trucks, well, I don't think he could have put another truck in between where I was and the tanker and this other truck behind me. And that was around 5 p.m. On Tuesday night. And then the people wonder why. Like I don't have nothing against truckers, but there is one out of how many that do not and should not be on the road.
Francis, I appreciate the call. We did talk with truckers for Safer Highways earlier this week. They say we need stricter licensing and training requirements. I get where you're coming from. On the point of the quote-unquote surplus from which our $200 rebate is coming, as David Drew pointed out in our previous hour with the Friday 4 Roundtable, it's not coming from any surplus. It's just the credit card isn't as maxed out as we thought it would be. Here's some money. You're getting your grandchildren's children's money at this point. But I got an email yesterday from Ian, and I really like it. Ian points out that given the population in the region of Waterloo, and if we just use round numbers, $100 million is going to be coming to the region of Waterloo alone when this rebate, when these rebate checks are mailed out. $100 million. What do you think we could do in this community with $100 million? What if some way, somehow, we began a $200 rebate movement whereby when the rebate arrived, we all collectively pooled it with, I don't know, the United Way, the food bank, Farwell for Hire, $100 million. Like, we could all just say, the day that the rebate arrives, we're donating it to X, Y, or Z. $100 million is going to arrive in the bank accounts in this community-ish when those rebate checks show up next year. What could we do in this region? Forget the government taking care of programs and services for us. We'll figure out what we need and want here in the region, and we'll spend the $100 million on it. This is the Mike Farwell Show, your 12 o'clock talkback hour, 570 News Radio.
Sick things in cars rotate round my star. Things, my things, my pets, my things. I love you, things. I see as much as you.
It is an all-request Friday here on the show, and when you hear Alice Cooper, you know the request is coming from our buddy Mark. He loves his Alice Cooper. That's a little bit of sick things on the show. Every Friday is an all-request Friday, and our talkback hour is the Free Phones Friday edition. Pro tip, if you don't get through on the line you're calling, try another one. We've got three different lines, 1-800-570-5715, *570, or 519-570-2545. And if your line is locked up, you can try another line. You might get through on that one. Let's get back to the phones on the Talkback Hour. Mark, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Mike. Cooper rules, buddy.
Oh, look at that. It was your song, and here you are. Cooper rules. Rush rules, buddy, but that's okay.
Okay. I'll call them even. Anyway, I got a whack-a-doodle idea, Mike, as you call it.
I love whack-a-doodle ideas, my friend. Let's hear it.
Okay. you know, when you're driving down any given street, Mike, they've got those signs up. If you're driving under the speed limit, you get the big smiley face.
Yeah, yeah, I know them well.
Okay. So here's how to slow people down. You get the big smiley face, and you get a $25 check from the government.
Wow. So every time you maintain speed, you get...
Or under.
Or under, yes. Okay, so if you're below or... if you're at or below the speed limit, you get a $25 rebate check.
Yeah, that'll slow people down, Mike.
So you want positive reinforcement instead of negative reinforcement. Don't take the money away for speeding. Give it to me for driving the speed limit.
Correct.
Attaboy, Mark. I love it.
And you know what, Mike?
What?
I will drive down that street 10 times a day.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, Farsi.
All right, Mark. Thanks. I love a good wackadoodle idea on this show. And as far as wackadoodle ideas go, that's probably the most wackadoodle I've ever heard. But I get the theory, and I remember that from Psych 101 a way back when. Positive versus negative reinforcement. Let's try it Mark's way. Andre, you're on the Talk Back Hour. Good afternoon.
Game day, baby.
Game day, baby.
Yep. I might be tired tonight, so, right?
Like last week? You called last week and said it was cold while you were... Andre, I left the rink an hour after you called. It was still warm. What were you... Listen, I know what you were doing. I know what you were doing. You called. Don't worry about it.
Nope.
Yep. You were so... You were so... Don't, Andre, don't tell me lies. Lies make baby Jesus cry.
No, you, it's because you are a teacher, not in weather. When it's that temperature and it rained all day, it's very damn. It gets to your bones.
No, I went outside after it was still warm. I don't believe you. Sorry.
Because you were hot from the game.
Because you were drunk from the wine, Andre.
No, I promise.
Uh-huh.
I did not on Tuesday.
Okay, not on Tuesday.
No, not on Tuesday. The kids the next day. But anyway, I just want to call Lynn to say, year after year, yes, 2 years ago it was 45 children. I'm talking about Halloween. Last year was 52 Halloweeners, and this year was 65. And it was hilarious because even some kids didn't even know what pop was, because this year for the first time I got a case of Crush, you know, because it's just like my kids like crush when we order pizza, and it's like, okay, you know what, I'm gonna get two cases of Crush and I'm gonna get your Kit Kat packaged, whatever, it was on sale plus the $2 ticket. So your kids were very spoiled, but you know what, it was the weather. Thank you, Mother Nature, for holding on. The weather was beautiful. And the kids were happy. It was fantastic. And I just want to share that. It was safe, and that's the most important thing. And I got so many laughs. And go Rangers.
All right, Andre. Thanks for that. It's pretty interesting. We feel in our household like we've done something wrong. 15 kids. That's it. 7 knocks at the door. 15 kids total. Andre, he has seen steady progression up. Every year we get excited. This is going to be the year, right? Nope. 15 kids. I'm not blaming you, kids. I'm just saying we've got good candy. Like, I love to eat it because, you know, I've never met some sugar I didn't want to consume, but I can't figure it out. I just can't figure it out. And I feel like I'm losing the competition because people are always sharing. Well, we got this many. With a friend of mine, more than 600 chocolate bars handed out and more than 100 packs of Pokemon cards. She had to raid her own pantry after the fact to get to satisfy all of the trick-or-treaters. How many did you get at your place? What was your neighborhood like? Can you beat Andre's 65? This is the Mike Farwell Show. Free Phones Friday, 570 News Radio.
Sorry is the fool who trades his soul for a Corvette. Thinks he'll get the girl, he'll only get the mechanic. What's missing? He's living a day he'll soon forget.
Ah, some Pearl Jam by request from Steve on this All Request Friday here on the show. Song's called Soon Forget, and Steve sends it out to Donald Trump. I hope Mr. Trump is listening to the show today, because that would be awesome. This is the best show of any show that's ever been shown or listened to. I get the very best listeners in the world. It's all right here. I'm no Alec Baldwin. I can't really do good impressions at all. I can, though, answer your calls during the 12 o'clock talkback hour. This is Free Phones Friday. Dan is with us. Good afternoon, Dan.
Good afternoon, Mr. Farwell. How are you,
sir? Oh, it's my favorite, Dan. I'm so good now. How are you?
Listen, brother, you know what they say, a bad Friday's still better than a good Monday.
Amen to that.
Listen, two quick points.
Yep.
First of all, as much as I love Rush and I saw them back in the day, for me, it's still the Guess Who. All right. Well, we'll go there. I know you're going to agree.
We will. And that's fine, though. I got a lot of time for the Guess Who as well.
That's right. Cameras. Okay. Here's a quick story for you.
Yep.
Franklin Public School. I'm driving past Franklin Public School on Christmas Day at 12:30. And I was going, I guess I was going 42. So I got a ticket for Christmas Day at 12:30. And I went in and I said, okay, I get it. I got to pay the ticket. I said, but it's Christmas Day. Like, there are no kids anywhere near here. And they said, yeah, I know, sir, but they don't turn off. I said, fine. But the real kick in the slats was 3 weeks later, they raised it to 40.
Come on.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, see that? And 42, like, can we just be honest? 42 on Franklin is not excessive.
No. And I get it. But just turning cameras off when it's not really a priority time. Anyways, my friend, have a good weekend.
Thank you, Dan. Great to hear from you. And what am I going to add to that? The region's got to figure this out because it's not fair. It's punitive. It's not helpful. Jason, good afternoon.
I wish these counselors would know what they're doing, eh, Mike?
I'll tell you one counselor that knows what they're doing, the one I'm talking to. I loved your data on Monday night. Loved it.
Well, you know, you referenced it at the beginning of your show here at 12 o'clock that there are far more areas and intersections that are far more dangerous where more collisions happen between pedestrians and cars or cars and cars than there are in school zones. It has nothing to do with not caring and not believing, you know, that school zones or community safety zones aren't important. They are. I have two young girls who walk to school on a daily basis. But if we're going to really follow the data, and I think that's a lot of the time our transportation departments are following data, the data shows that those are not the most critical areas that we need to address. The reason why I called, though, Mike, is last night I had some people down the street celebrating Diwali, setting off fireworks. My daughters come to me right before they go to bed and say, Dad, they're setting fireworks off in the middle of the street. So I'm like, no way. So I walked down there and I said, guys, you can't be lighting fireworks off in the middle of the road. Like, well, where can we go? You got to go to your backyard. You can't be doing it in the middle of the street. They were just lighting the firecracker, the firework, placing it on the ground and letting it go boom anywhere. It's obviously more education needs to be had at the distributors of these licensees that sell the firecracker, the fireworks. But I couldn't. They were doing it in the middle of the road. It's like, come on. So, anyways, they moved to the back of their property, and they were almost done. But it's just like, okay, how do we make people understand the importance of safety, whether it's on roads or setting off fireworks. But that's all. Have a great weekend, Mike. It's a bye week. It's awesome. No stress this weekend at all.
All right. Thanks, Jason. Bye week for our Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm so late for news. This is the Mike Farwell Show. 570 News Radio.
Leave the bureau in the snow. Catch a train to Uncle Paul. Early evening ring around the room. Slipping by the concierge. By the backside up the stairs, snap the latch and creep into the room.
I like the message in the song by Hookah Orchestra. It's called Listen to the Radio by request from Kyle here on All Request Fridays on the radio program. To Aaron Anderson, I'm so sorry for being so late for the 12:30 update. I took away a full 30% of her time to talk. And I feel bad about that. I hope you got to hear, though, from Jason just before the news. Jason's a counselor in Kitchener. Not only did he remind us of the data that transportation departments have at their fingertips municipally, where we can determine through the use of that data where the most collisions between vehicles and pedestrians are happening. And maybe, just maybe, we could use that to determine where we place speed cameras or red light cameras, etc. And adding to the mix the fireworks that were being set off on his street last night, not as part of a celebration in a backyard for Diwali or anything like that, but in the middle of the street, because that's just what we do. I'm telling you, fireworks is the new Ezra Avenue St. Paddy's Day party in the region, in my opinion. Let's get back to the phones. Free Phones Friday. Claire, good afternoon.
Yeah, my issue is regarding about people that are on disability. And this government is not giving enough money to the region to help people with health problems. I have asthma, and the region will not help people that have health problems. I have asthma, and a lot of people have health problems, and the region is not helping people with health problems. And I'm disgusted.
So
and
what kind of help do you need that you're not getting?
I have asthma. They won't help me get, I have a dehumidifier in my apartment to take out the air, things out of the air. I need a new HEPA, I need a new filter. I can't get one. It's about $147 from, I'm going to get it from Electric Lux where I got my vacuum. That's where I can only get this filter. And I don't have the money because the government doesn't give me enough money like everyone else. They don't treat us. This government doesn't treat us like human beings. They treat us like lab rats, like guinea pigs.
Yeah.
And if you look at what they're getting, if you look at the Sunshine List, what these politicians are getting, you'd be disgusted.
Claire, I appreciate the call. It breaks my heart. It does. And I will just say Mike Morris, the MP for Kitchener Center, MP, so I'm going federal on you now, but bear with me, because he has made the point at the federal level that as a country, we are failing our disabled population and inadequately funding various programs. It's legislated poverty, as Mike has pointed out, and I don't think he's wrong. And that should be something certainly that is increased provincially, because that's where many of those payments come from. But I'm glad that Mike is advocating federally as well. There is a role for our municipal governments as well. I get that. But primarily, this is upper levels. I'm not trying to diminish, though, the concern. It does really break my heart. And I'm sorry for you, Claire. I really am. And thanks for sharing the story. William, good afternoon.
Oh, yes. Hello.
Hello. Can I call you Bill?
Sure.
All right. What's going on, Bill?
Now, I've read articles in the newspaper, and you were talking about speed limits and in school zones, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, now, and one of the arguments is that there are fewer wrecks in school zones, so why do we have speed limits in there? Think about it. Maybe that's the reason we have less wrecks. The speed limits are lower and under control.
Well, I think so, but I mean, they've always been that way, right? Like what we're doing now is
so
adding.
You're going to have fewer wrecks. You're going to have fewer problems in there.
All right. Well, yeah, fair point. If it's safe now, it'll continue to be safe.
Well, yeah, but these guys are saying, hey, it's less wrecks, so why don't we raise the speed limit? Why is there a speed limit? So why is there a speed limit?
I'm not sure I'm following your entire train of thought here.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. There are less wrecks and less problems because the speed limit is controlled at 40.
But I get that. But what's happening is it's being reduced to 30. Now, in some places. And the biggest problem, even the 30 aside, is that the school zone or that lower speed limit is applied even when school is not in session. And that's what gets people frustrated. If it's in the interests of safety and we're going to protect all those vulnerable road users / school children, then do so while they're at the school, not when they're not at the school. And frankly, if it's in the interests of safety, I don't know how much safer a road can get than a road that has never had a collision. Like, it's already safe. So I don't know what we're doing. I don't know what we're doing, but, well, I do know what we're doing. We're implementing something that turns out to be a cash grab is what we're doing. Terry, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Mike.
Whoa. Wait a minute. Hang on. I thought it might be, like, when I saw this name on my screen, I thought, what? Because it's after Halloween. Have you risen from the dead, Terry? Are you here from the great beyond? I was worried about you.
I've called in when you've had guest hosts. I think just a couple weeks ago I called in.
Well, I don't get to listen when I have a guest host. I'm sorry.
Oh, is that right?
So, wait, so you've been avoiding me?
No, I haven't been avoiding you. I did mention it to Devin why I'm not calling that much. It's because it's so hard to get through now.
I'm so popular. I know. Well, listen, all I want to say is I'm happy to hear your voice. I honestly have inquired about you. I'm like, I wonder where Terry is.
No, it's I'm still alive and kicking. You know, for some people it's probably unfortunate, but when I do call in, it's just so hard to get through sometimes because of the new format. We're constantly going for commercials, and I'm kind of on the go all day, so I can't be on hold many times. So that's why I'm not calling in as much. But no, Mike, you're still in favor. You're still a good man. But I know a couple of days ago you were talking about retesting people at drive test centers every so often.
Yeah, I'd like to do it every 5 years.
And someone called in, and I'm 100% in agreement with that call. I can't remember who his name was, but drive test can barely handle the workload that they have now. Can you imagine if you did that? I know you'd have to put in all this new infrastructure, but my suggestion, probably a better one, and I know this is already used some fleet and courier and fleet. Transportation and courier fleets already use this technology. They can put these boxes in your vehicle where they track all your data in your driving, and all that information can be downloaded from your insurance company. And at the end of the year, when your renewal comes up, or your policy renewal comes up, they can just look at your driving statistics, and then they can base your premium on that. So if you're a really bad driver, you run stop signs, you speed, that will all be there on your data, and then they can issue you a new premium at that. But that would probably, at best, decrease people from driving erratically. I mean, let the insurance companies handle it. They have all the tools and the know-how how to deal with it, better than drive tests anyway. That's my opinion, Mike. It can be done. It's done now. I know it'd be a lot to do that to current vehicles, but it should be done, and I think that would be a lot better than retesting people. Anyway, right. Mike, have yourself a good weekend, and let's hope for the Rangers' success tonight.
Thanks. You bet. Bye-bye. I'm certainly hoping for the Rangers' success tonight. I'm really happy to hear Terry's voice. I truly thought that we'd lost him. And not just, I mean, if I pissed somebody off, it wouldn't be the first time. That's not the reason. Although I wouldn't want somebody to stop listening just for that either. But I really just thought it's like a warm blanket. Some of your regulars, Terry's been around on this show, on this station with us for a long time. I don't hate the idea. And just on the drive test every 5 years retesting, yeah, the infrastructure we would need, let's build it and make it revenue neutral because those vehicle owners would pay what's required to have their testing done regularly because what's going on right now sure as heck ain't working. We're just not doing a good job obeying rules of the road, or if we even know the rules of the road, and navigating all of these new roundabouts and intersections and you name it. This is the Mike Farwell Show, Free Phones Friday, 570 News Radio.
Some afternoon delight. My motto's always been, when it's right, it's right. Why wait until the middle of a cold, dark night, when everything's a little clearer?
I can't hear this without thinking of Ron Burgundy. I'm an anchor man. I must read the news. If you don't know who Ron Burgundy is, we cannot even be friends, okay? Only the greatest news anchor ever to grace U.S. television news. That is the Starland Vocal Band and Afternoon Delight by request from Ron on this All Request Friday here on the show. It's also Free Phones Friday time. Back to the phones we go. Is this my Memorial Cup winning friend, Doug Keeler?
It certainly is.
Oh, Mr. Keeler, I'm great now. How are you?
Oh, I've been fired up since 9:45 this morning when you were talking to this guy about the election. Like, I've lost a lot of family and friends that were, you know, over the years playing hockey in the States over this election thing. And obviously, I wouldn't vote for anybody that's a dictator. So you know who, where my vote would go. So when this guy said here, well, you know, this happened 8 years ago, getting off the bus. First of all, the guy shouldn't have been allowed to run for office. I have about 10 points here, if it's all right, I bring him up with. Like facts, not opinions about this Trump guy.
Sure.
Hang Mike Pence, Springfield, Ohio. The Haitians are eating pets. Let's get rid of the immigrants. He phones Georgia for 11,000 votes. He still hasn't conceded the election or shaken hands. And I know your father and my father would say, be a gracious winner, be a gracious loser. Then you have Puerto Rico, the island of floating garbage. You have COVID's going to be over in September. Thousands of people died. Threats to Fauci, threats to Sanjay Gupta, Marjorie Taylor Greene saying the Democrats were responsible for the hurricane. The other thing is, lately, firing squad for Liz Cheney because she jumped ship. His disrespect for the military, this is the best one. He had agreed to pay for the funeral of a military person in the States, and then when he found out it was $60,000, he reneged, and he said it doesn't cost $60,000 to bury a Mexican. So you know where my heart lies, Mike, and I can't understand how people can't separate facts from opinions. I just can't believe it. So I give you credit because you handled it very good this morning.
Thank you, sir. It's great to hear from you, as always. And Doug lays it out so well. And that's why I said what I said. No matter what my political leaning may be, if I was a card-carrying Republican, I couldn't vote for this individual, this nominee, as a person on moral grounds. Simple as that. And I think Doug just knocks that one right out of the park. That's what a Memorial Cup champion does. He won that Memorial Cup with the Niagara Falls Flyers back in the day. This is the Mike Farwell Show, your 12 o'clock talkback hour, 570 News Radio. I think you could already guess. You named this tune in about four notes. Bow, wow, wow. I want candy. By request from Andre on your All Request Friday here on the program. Andre, you're a day late and a dollar short because Halloween was yesterday. If you don't have candy left, pal, that's a you problem, not a me problem. Let's get back to the phones on this Free Phones Friday before we're done for the day and the week. Kyle, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Glad you like some Puka Orchestra, one of my favorite bands.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing is I want to say, is this Doug Ford $200 rebate thing? My household, we make well above what I think a lot of people are making, and I don't need the $200, and I'd rather take the $200 that I'm giving and giving it to somebody else. Like, seriously, I hear you had a caller earlier that, you know, that they said they could use the money, or there's people out there. You know what? Don't give it to the Mitch Marners. Don't give it to the millionaires. How about we figure it out, take some time to figure it out, and say, hey, instead of giving somebody $200 to somebody that really needs it, give them $1,000, because I'd rather use the $1,000 for somebody who needs it versus giving to everybody and some of the people that don't need it. So that's all I got to say, Mike. Thanks, man.
All right, Kyle. Appreciate it. I'll just remind you again, $100 million roughly will arrive in the region, give or take a nickel or two, when the $200 rebate checks get mailed out next year. What if we collectively, as a region, determined that we were going to take the $200 and put it or direct it to what? Let's make the choice. $100 million. We could do a lot with that, I think. Mary, good afternoon.
Oh, good Friday to you. I didn't agree with Terry. Do we need another government watching everything we do?
Maybe.
Don't
I don't know.
Do you want that?
That's a good point. It's a really good point. I do want safer roads. I do want people driving better.
But I don't want that this is, that there's no other alternative. No.
Okay.
We're governed to death. Anyway, my neighbor wasn't getting many trick or treaters. And he asked me over, and I got some chocolate bars. And I'm telling you, Mike, you're right. They're so small.
I know, they're itty-bitty.
What happened to them?
They're itty-bitty.
Yeah, they certainly are. And you have a... Oh, go Rangers, go.
Thanks, Mary. Go Rangers, go. All right, I'm going to squeeze in one more. Grant, I got like 30 seconds for you, buddy.
All right. That fella should be banned for life at any sporting event.
The guy that tried to take the ball away from Mookie Betts.
Because I don't know if you remember, in a Ranger game, someone was throwing pucks, I think, at a referee.
Are you sure? Are you sure? I don't remember that.
Yeah, I remember that. And
okay, I don't remember that, though.
You need to eat more than yogurt at lunchtime. I'm going to keep begging you. When I was begging Josh, Josh is now eating at lunchtime. You need your strength.
All right. Thanks, Grant. I need my strength. I did literally just finish my yogurt for the day. Like, it happened 15 minutes ago. Yogurt comes between noon and one for me these days. I'll take your words under advisement, Dr. Grant, and I got to get out of here. Ranger game tonight. Paul Fixter and I will be on the air at 6:30 with your Harris Law pregame show. Rob Snow, Now You Know, coming up from 1 until 3 this afternoon. Devin Robertson is our guy on the other side of the glass. My name is Mike Farwell. Bye for now.